Well, I would like to introduce today Renee Ying and Jim Brewer, who have been the state's primary champions for single-payer health care, for health care coverage for all, for everybody. In that, they are, of course, in line with the majority of Americans. I can't remember the percentage. I think it's around 96% of Americans think that they ought to have universal health care in some form or another. Somehow we don't get it, but it's a fight that I think needs to be waged. And today we have for you as our speaker the two people who've been strongest in Hawaii, who've never given up on this issue, and they'll tell you about it, and I'm sure looking for your help this coming legislative session. So let me present Renee Ying.
Topic. Different slant. Just a question. I'm curious. How many of you folks went to see Sickle?
Oh, sorry.
I was just wondering, how many of you folks went to see Sickle? Sickle.
Yes.
It was a great movie. If you get a chance, I suggest you see it. And Sickle. Michael Moore's new documentary, it was great. But anyway, and it was pointing towards the topic of what I'd like to talk about today with universal health care, and that is, why is it that some people in this drive to get universal health care, and universal just means that everyone in the universe has it, of course, we will all get it. But why is it some people are saying, in order to have health care for everyone, we need to have single-payer health care. And what is single-payer health care versus what all of the Democratic candidates are talking about, with more affordable health care, you know, subsidies, discounts, and all that sort of thing. Anyway, and why do all other advanced nations have universal health care, can afford to cover everyone, while the richest nation on earth can't afford to cover its 47 million uninsured, its 60 plus million underinsured? They pay for healthcare, but they don't get it. The 200 approximately million who pay for healthcare but have defined benefit packages. So if you get cancer, you may not be covered until your cancer is through. So you don't have adequate healthcare either. You know, I don't know if everybody has this handout yet, but the side that is not, the side that is not highlighted, I'm going to go over that first. The question is, why should we have single payer, the kind of healthcare that Canada has, the kind of healthcare that if you had traditional Medicare, you have. Medicare is single payer for all seniors, and I'm going to explain what single payer is in a second. It's one, in Moore's film, they covered three kinds of healthcare systems. One was single payer, which I'll explain in a second. One is National Health Service, which is what the UK has, Great Britain has, and basically what the VA is. UK, the VA, the government owns the hospital, pays the doctors. The system is government-run, government-owned, government-financed. Single-payer is not that. What they have in Canada and a lot of the other advanced nations, they either have National Health Service or single-payer, or actually they have multi-payer, but we're not going into that. Anyway, what that is the government has a FICA. You pay into one system. It's a single-payer is a financing system, right? You pay into one system, you pay your FICA, and then that pays your medical costs. And all of the providers, the doctors, the hospitals, most of them anyway, they're all privately provided. Okay, so this chart says, under National Health Service and single payer, there's one system that covers everyone. They don't have any uninsured, they don't have underinsured. They have all medically necessary care. You have cancer, they will treat you until your cancer is pow. You will not run out of your however many days of hospital care, however many dollars of care that you are allowed. You will be treat it until you are cured, all medically necessary care. There is no defined benefit package the way we have, where you have caps. The single system can have a single computer network. That means you can catch the fraud the way Medicare does. You can catch, you know, you can control costs, you can coordinate. The United States healthcare system, Canada's system costs approximately $3,500. The UK and Sweden, other national health services, they're even less. I don't have any figures. This figure is for about 2001. I don't have any figures. My figures are old, but the last figure I have for UK was $1,800. So it's probably maybe 2000 by now. United States healthcare with our private system costs us approximately $7,000 per person. And I'll go over in a minute why, because that's the other side of the, your handout. Of course, because you have all these medical insurance companies, you know, AQ said once, we have 1,559 insurance companies in this country, plus other healthcare entities like Medicare and Medicaid. That administrative bureaucracy doubles our healthcare costs. So everybody's going, well, if you expand, we pay so much. If you expand out to include the approximately 100, the one-third of us who have no insurance or are underinsured, how are we going to pay for it? The costs are unsustainable. Good question. Because, number one, we have no cost controls the way they have in other systems. Costs are rising too high, too fast. It's too profitable for corporations. Okay. Single payer. In a single payer system, and this is for Medicare risk pool. This is the Medicare risk pool. And this is 2000 figures. As you can see, the healthiest 20% of the Medicare population uses an average of nothing, or, you know, $10 a year. They're so healthy. The healthier 50% of the Medicare population in the year 2000 uses only $500 a year. That's us. We just go do our preventive care, go to the doctor all the time, make sure our eyes are okay. The healthiest 90% use only about $1,200. It's only the chronically ill and the end-of-life care that uses most of the money. And this is another way to show it. As you can see, the healthy use so little. Nothing. It's only the ones who have chronic illness and end-of-life care who use most of the money. Therefore, such as in Medicare, you're young, just before you're married, you work part-time, and your FICA goes into this one fund. This is what single payer is, okay? You pay into FICA, Medicare, into this one fund. You're 20, you get married, you never work again. Oh, I'm sorry, you're 20, you leave the country. You never get married, you never work again. That little bit of money that you have in this Medicare fund, when you get to be 65, because you are part of this one pool, you are able to access, when you need it, as much care as everybody else has, because Medicare and single payer is pooling your resources. So there's no such thing as you didn't pay your premium that year, you no longer have medical care. Everyone is pooling their resources. And when you are healthy, you can go to the doctor. You pay your however many in FICA or healthcare premiums, and you only use a little bit of it, but the rest of it stays in here. And as you get older or you become chronically ill, you are continuing to put in, and you use what you put in when you need it. But then when you have end-of-life care and chronic illness, you are using all this other money from 90% of the other people, because you're pooling resources, and they will cover you for whatever you need, for your cancer, for your long-term care, because they don't need it yet, and it's a pay-as-you-go system. While they are young and healthy, they're paying in, and it goes out to the people who need it. So that's why single-payer works. Everyone pays into one fund, and you get all the medically necessary care, and the one computer system catches the fraud, the malpractice, coordinates and plans the system so that you put your money where you need it and you don't pay out for profit and all that kind of stuff. Okay, now the other side of this chart, the highlighted side, more explains why their system will work. But if we expand ours out, it's just unsustainable. If you look at this bar at the top of the page, the first half is how much Canada pays for all medically necessary care, approximately $3,500 per person. Add on to that another $3,500. This is how much, this whole bar is how much the United States pays per capita, $7,000 about. But, you know, hopefully hopefully they at least pay half for our medical care. You know, you don't get all medically necessary care because you get a defined benefit package, a limited number of days, a limited amount of money paid for your care. So, but they, you know, part of it does go for medical care in the U.S. Then another one-third of it, 31%, according to the Harvard Medical School and the Private Citizen Research Center set up by Nader, they did a recent study. About one-third of our healthcare, our $7,000 healthcare dollars goes to administrative bureaucracies. All these people over here. Your private health insurance, Medicare, Medicaid, VA, workers' comp, auto and home insurance, liability insurance, and what was this last one? Oh, VA. Okay. All of these administrative bureaucracies take up one-third of all of our healthcare money. And then at the end, then you have the private insurance needs to have their profit or their high CEO compensations, or they need to pay for the incredibly high amount of PR in order to get market share, or they need to pay medical reviewers, all those extra people in the doctor's office that call the insurance company and say, would you please let me give so-and-so this treatment, and they give them the runaround, and instead of one person in the office, they have to have four people in the office, which we end up paying for. Okay, or they, a big part of the cost savings in a single payer is that you do preventive care. You prevent the cancer so it doesn't get serious and expensive. You prevent, you know, the diabetes from getting serious and therefore more expensive. So that's a big part of limiting costs in a single payer. Okay, now think about all of what the presidential candidates have been saying. They're going to basically keep the U.S. system. They're going to give you affordable care by making, giving subsidies to whoever's what government entity, right? They're going to make it more affordable, quote unquote affordable, by making higher copays and deductibles so that everyone will be able to afford it, but a lot of them won't be able to pay the copays and deductibles. But anyway, even Hillary Clinton's HMO, universal health care, wasn't going to work because my husband is, we're both with Kaiser, okay? Average 7,000 per capita. Okay, we're healthy. We pay $500 to the doctor a year. We don't need to pay the 7,000, right? But he's on Medicare, and that Medicare goes all to Kaiser, all 7,000 of it. In the Western region, it's about that. We only use 500. That's a big drain on Medicare. Okay, so that wouldn't have worked either. And that is the reason, guys, why the Green Party, Kucinich and Conyers, Michael Moore, a lot of the other nations, advanced nations in the world, have single payer because it's the only one that takes out all of the profit, all of the, they handle malpractice, they coordinate, they plan. It's cheaper. And that's why they can afford to have universal health care and we can't. And if you want to read a great book, this is in the public library, Critical Condition. It tells you why all the stuff that has been going wrong in the medical profession, it's not by accident. A lot of it, for instance, all the infections we hear about now, it's because they don't clean to the level that they used to, because their costs are so, anyway, it tells you why in this book. It's a horror story and extremely interesting. And I thank you so much for coming to listen to us about this issue again and again. And now Jim is going to talk about the single payer bill that is in the Hawaii State Legislature. It was in last year, and it will, of course, be in again this year. And he's going to go over it a little now for the second half of this. Thank you very much.
I'll pass these down. These are copies of a bill that is submitted this year, and it'll be open for next year. Aloha, I'm Jim Brewer, and as Larry pointed out, we've been working on this, I think, since 1993 or before. But I also don't want to leave out some other important players, and that is Aquan McElrath. I think she's been at it perhaps longer than we have, and she appeared on a number of shows that we had on Employees Today. If you'd like to watch our show, our TV show, every Sunday at 5 on Channel 54, it's called Employees Today. And this bill that we have here is 1598, and there is a companion bill in the Senate side. And I'm sorry, I don't know what the number of that one is, but I will let Larry know. Maybe it'll go in the newsletter or something. Yeah, so, but 1598 was introduced. And as you'll see on the front, it was introduced by Mizuno, Bertram, Carroll, Green, Waters, Brower, Magowai, Monahan, and Suki. And the thing is that it was never brought up during the session. And I have to say that, frankly, Renee and I were tired out from the election. She and I ran for governor, lieutenant governor, on the Green Party ticket. And also, the folks who had been working on this, I don't know, it seemed like people got kind of discouraged after this, last year. And but anyway, I think it's picking up. I think SICO gave this new life. And some people say, well, why do this at the Hawaii state level? Why not just wait and do it at the federal level? Or everybody join in, as and there's a drive all across the country. But I would like to mention that in Canada, it started in one province, and it spread, and finally it was incorporated throughout the entire country. the word universal, this is truly universal. Nobody's left out, nobody's left behind. And that's the sad story of our work over 34 years. Renee and I have been working as activists in the community for social change. And one of the things that we find out in our society, there's just so many people who are left out, are left behind. And this certainly, as she just mentioned, is one of those situations. And on page 5 on this, I will bring your attention to the fact that the legislature down after number 8, you'll see item 8, the legislature declares that single-payer, uniformly delivered, high-quality health care for all is a basic human right for Hawaii citizens. Now, this follows on the tradition, and I know that AQ was very much involved in getting our... Renee, what was, you know, our health plan before, it's the Prepaid Health Care Act of 1974. Prepaid Health Care Act made it so that anybody any employer who employed you more than 20 hours a week would be obliged to pay a big share of your health plan. And that was very good, and it helped Hawaii. As a matter of fact, as soon as it happened, the Congress rushed to make sure it wasn't done ever again. And so we've been operating in Hawaii under an exception over all those years. And so we were called the health state. Well, the trickle-down economics and that mindset and everything has come to Hawaii. And by the way, tell me when my time's up. I'm oblivious of these things. And so the purpose of this act is to create a unified single-payer universal health care system covering all of Hawaii's residents, similar to that of Canada's. And then on page 7, it says, there is established the single-payer universal health insurance system to provide the same uniformly high-quality level of medically necessary health care to all Hawaii's permanent residents. Private health care insurers are prohibited from duplicating the coverages provided by the single-payer universal health care system. Then it talks about these 20 concepts, and I will bounce down through a few of them and just kind of tell you basically on page 13, it says State Healthcare Insurance Planning and Financing Authority, and I can see already if we get this passed, this will be called SHIPFA, because they have all these acronyms. And so that would be the State Healthcare Insurance Planning and Financing Authority. There is established within the Department of Taxation for administrative support purposes the elected autonomous authority to determine the cost of the system and to gather the needed financing methods and transition mechanisms, including the retraining of affected personnel. I think this is a big thing because, whenever you do major reformation of government and whatnot, usually there will be people who are affected as far as their jobs are included, are concerned. And so this thing would have a retraining fund and et cetera to take care of that kind of a thing. And the trustee members of the authority will be chosen through statewide election. The authority shall be composed of 7 voting trustee members and meet the same age and residence requirements as candidates for the state senate. And so that's all set up about how we set up the SHIPFA, the authority to do this. And then I want to go through those briefly, some of the concepts. There are 20 functional concepts, and I wish each of you would take the time at your leisure to study these functional concepts. But certainly it's universal, everybody's covered, it's prepaid. In other words, every month, instead of what you would have would be, you would be paying in a premium for health insurance, but it would be considerably less than what it presently costs. The savings in this, Renee has talked about it, it's about a one-third savings at least, and so it'll be comprehensive. Now, this is another thing, is that universal healthcare systems are often proposed, but they'll have a defined benefit package. But when you have a defined benefit package, that means that you don't necessarily cover everything that's medically necessary. And so some people start to be left out and left behind. So the thing is, that the defining thing about this is that it is comprehensive for all medically necessary things. It's accessible. It's accessible to all, regardless of your station in life. It's high quality, and because the high-class people and us low-class people, we're all included, and the high-class people want first-class care, so if they're going to get first-class care, we're going to get first-class care. choice. Everybody chooses their physician, dentist, and other single-payer caregivers. It's portable. Doesn't matter where you work. You can change your job, and you're covered, period, because you have a health care card. And it's publicly administered through the single-payer health insurance authority. And it's publicly funded. Healthcare insurance premiums are directly or indirectly collected in like FICA for Medicare and whatnot. But again, this is basically, it's not a tax because you're basically paying a premium. When you're young, you don't need, in a general sense, you don't need it that much. But all of us are going to grow old, so we'll all be covered in our later years and whatnot for when things become intense. It's pay as we go, because each month it goes into the system, and so we're not borrowing money and to leave a debt to our children or whatnot. And there's a fiscal firewall. I think this is a big deal here. This is set up so that the authority is semi-autonomous, like the Board of Water Supply is. And that means that the state authority collects all the funding and whatnot and administers it. And the state cannot come in and see a pot of gold and take it for other things. And so also one of the big savings they have in Canada is a central unified electronic health information database. Right now, we don't have this. It doesn't matter if you're traveling on Maui or whatnot and you become injured, well, you're part of the electronic database and a doctor can serve you over there just like you were here at home. But the advantage of this is it gives you accurate future projections, unprecedented planning and cost containment capabilities, early detection of medical mistakes, malpractice, and fraud. This is a big part of our system now, the fraud and the overcharging and all of that. This will all be detected by this electronic system. Early, but also there's a positive side to that, not just a punitive side, but it'll be early system-wide sharing of emerging best practices. If a physician comes up with a new way of serving patients, it'll be part of the system immediately. It'll be spread throughout the state. And it'll have a county health care review boards, which will be elected also at the county level, and their job will be to work with the state authority and make sure that the system is made applicable to their particular island and its particular conditions. And again, there's a retraining fund for people whose jobs might be affected by this. Global budgets for the hospitals gives them the funds they can count on each year. They don't really basically have to go and have begathons on TV and things like that. Okay, so that pretty much is it, and I hope that you enjoy this because to me, I look at it and it makes me feel overjoyed, because what we're going to see here is we're going to see people actually fully covered for their full lifetime. And if there are any questions, I will entertain those questions if I have any time left. Oh, yes, sir.
I need to start off by saying I am in total agreement with the need for a single-payer system of this kind. However, there is a statute at the federal level called ERISA.
Right.
And when Hawaii tried to create a prepaid health plan back in 1974, people didn't like it, brought a lawsuit, and the plan was killed.
Mm-hmm.
Went all the way to the United States Supreme Court, and
right.
They agreed
right.
that ERISA, which is a federal law, killed our prepaid
right.
health care act.
Right.
Subsequently, I think probably Senator Inouye and others went to Congress, and they got the United States Congress to create a special exception for the state
right.
of Hawaii. which is very limited. It says, in effect, you can have your prepaid health care act, but if you try to amend it, forget it. It'll kill it.
Right.
You're stuck with the way we've written it, okay? Now, it seems to me that this particular plan, which is very, very vague, does not set out a lot of the detail that you're going to need to run a system.
Right.
But it's something like the criteria in ERISA is whether the legislation affects employee benefit plans.
Right.
Now, if this is going to do anything, it surely is going to affect employee benefit plans. It's going to eliminate them.
Right. Well,
it seems to me that that is going to immediately cause the Hawaii, even if we pass it, to be struck down. We'll be back in the same situation we were back when we started this whole thing. In other words, the way it's set up now with ERISA, to do it in Congress, United States Congress, maybe you can get a single payer.
Right.
If the states try to do it, they immediately run into the barrier of ERISA.
I'm glad you went through the... I'll repeat it. What he did is he made very simple, he fleshed out what I was talking about before, that we're the only state that has the Prepaid Health Care Act. Now, and certainly we've thought about this, and I believe it's in this bill. I'm fairly certain that it is. I haven't read it recently, but we have talked about this, and during the transition period, in the initial phases, we foresee the authority continuing the Prepaid Health Care Act as part of the funding. So the thing is that there will be a transition into this once it's fully up and going. In other words, there's other things to be considered. I'm sorry. What he said about it is that there is a federal law, the ERISA, which basically the Prepaid Health Care Act ran up against that. It went all the way to the Supreme Court, and it was ruled against, but Senator Inouye got an exception, and so we maintain it, and we're the only state in the union which had it, and it's one of the reasons we were called the health state all these years. But the thing is, we thought about this, and we see there during the transition period, this would be very carefully protected. As a matter of fact, this was one of my concerns right from the very beginning, right along with all the unions and all the other folks, even though many unions are not covered by this because they do their own negotiating. But the thing is that certainly we thought about this, and we believe that this authority can operate within those confines. We talk about how you can do that. So I hope you would, Professor Miller, I hope you would look at this and help us out with this, because I believe we can do this, because I'm one of these people who believes when there's a will, there's a way, and we'll do it as long as we have the will. I mean, once people see this, this is a great dream come true, and once people see this, then we will have so many heads to contribute to this. And all the negative thinkers and whatnot, they will have to step aside, because we're going to find the way. Yes, ma'am. Yes, it is. You would be in it. You can't duplicate this coverage. The wealthy can't get off the hook and get special health care. Everybody, rich and poor, gets the same top quality health care. Medicare, that's again another thing that we have to negotiate during the early parts of this process. The authority, though, can start moving in that direction. And again, hopefully, while we're testifying this session, people will come forward with the ideas of how we can do it. We know that they had this task force that was put together, and we went to the hearings. It was made up basically of the people who've created the problems and who are part of the problem, and so it didn't go anywhere. And it's typical, like the Clean Elections Bill, for instance.
But anyway, I just wanted to make the comment also that it needs to be mandatory, because you need to have a particular mass of people in order to make a system work. And apparently, in order for a single-payer system to work, you need a minimum of 1 million people in your pool. I've heard a million and a half, but it's okay, we can reach it. 1 million people in your pool, so it needs to be mandatory in order for it to work.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, in just a second, I'll add to that. I don't necessarily completely agree with that. Is that I don't know whether it's 1 million or whatever, but the point is that I just philosophically believe that the system will not work, because if you allow the wealthy to have their own system, then what will happen is we'll have the same old thing of people left out and left behind. And this system makes sure that nobody's left out or left behind. It's truly universal. Everybody gets high quality. As a matter of fact, folks who are wealthy, they pay a lot of money for their, they'll be paying less, a lot less. And they'll be getting the same high-quality health care. So I don't see any reason for them not to be left out and it not be mandatory. Yes, I'm sorry.
I understand that the reason our present health care system isn't working is because employers who have, 20 or more, have to have this insurance. And the health costs have gone up so high,
right,
they can't afford it.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a law there, but they can't abide by it. I don't know what they're doing to not abide by it.
Yeah.
Do you know?
No, I don't know exactly how they do. I don't know whether you're talking about the 20-hour.
Just 20-hour health care system for people, yeah.
Right. They're basically hiring a lot of part-time people. In other words, they're supposed to be full employment in Hawaii now, and people are competing for employees. However, we have more than full employment. We have over-employment here. We have people working two jobs to make one paycheck, and that's part of the problem that we have here. Yes.
Oh,
would you like to come up here?
Yeah.
I foresee a huge public relations battle to get this through. It's going to be called socialized medicine. It's going to be all the things that we fought for when we're trying to get long-term care insurance, all the name calling, and I think it's going to be an election year next year, and nobody in the legislature wants to pass a bill that's going to raise taxes. So the battle, it seems to be, is not only in the legislature, but it's in the community, and how to get a critical mass in favor of this to make sure the legislators know that there are enough people for it so they don't have to be afraid of being elected out of office. Have you thought about what kind of public relations plan you're going to do?
The thing is, I say emphatically that we have to state up front. This is not a matter of new taxes. Basically, what people will be doing is paying a very low insurance premium. Universally, everybody will be paying it with some reservations. It's a premium. It's a low premium. It's not a tax. So we have to do that. But also about the name calling, I think people have reached a point where they're beyond name calling. Well, yes, I know. But what I'm saying is I'm talking about the bulk of the people. That's what I'm saying, is the bulk of the people want results right now. They want solution.
Actually, it's interesting because before this last session, or two sessions ago, actually, when the healthcare task force bill was up, you heard a lot of the socialist sort of talk. And people don't know what socialist is. I still don't know myself. But anyway, and this last session, actually the last two sessions, I saw it in somebody's testimony exactly once. and people just need to know what socialist is. It's the VA. The government owns the building, the government pays the doctors, the government hires the doctors, the government does everything. It's the UK, it's Sweden. Medicare is not socialist. The government doesn't own those doctors. They're privately, they're, you know, private providers. So we can put that name to rest very easily, and I have seen less of it.
And maybe we're at the end of our time. I would just like to remind you that Medicare, as she kind of mentioned here, Medicare is single payer universal health care for people over 65. And why do people over 65 have it? Partly because they're a powerful voting bloc, but part of it is the private sector does not want them. Hey, they're too costly. They can't make any profits off of it. And so this is another example of privatizing, intentionally privatizing part of our medical system so that we taxpayers pick up the slack or whatever. Anyway, it's left off. The insurance companies do not want this. Larry.
Yeah, I was wondering where socialized medicine will come up. It's being used to...
Yeah, sure.
This is also something that's dear to my heart. So if I could just say,
sure.
Each of us, as activists, you may find that someone is in front of you and they say, we're against socialized medicine, or Canada has long waits, people there just can't get any service, and so forth. These, I think, are the two things that you hear most often. The first... yes, in Britain, you can describe the system as socialized medicine in the sense that the doctors work for the government. In other countries, they're reimbursed pretty much like doctors here. And so it's not socialized medicine. It can be single payer. In other words, they get their payment for your treatment from one place. Okay, but they don't work for the government. So it isn't socialized medicine. If anything, we have doctors in this country who treat the elderly who can be called that. But the more difficult thing is very often you'll hear that, they wait a long time in Canada to get elective surgery or whatever. Actually, there are waits in different countries according to the importance. Now, you have to make a trade-off someplace, but what people don't... They throw this in and they say because it's a single-payer system or because it's a universal health care system. It's not. Canada underfunds their medical system. The reason that there are waits when there are waits, which is actually decreasing and very often less than the United States for the same procedure, the reason that there are waits is because they don't pay enough. We pay $6,000 to $7,000 for the treatment that some of us get. Okay, they pay $1,700 to $3,000. I can't remember the number for Canada. And by and large, the Canadian Parliament has realized they have to raise the amount that they put into the medical system. And why are they doing this? Because they want to prevent waits. Okay, we in this country, we wait. If you go to Kapiolani for a mammogram and the doctor calls up and says, oh, we found this little thing, we want you to go back and do this again. They make an appointment for you, it could be 3 weeks. Okay, so for 3 weeks, the poor woman is wondering, what is happening to me? Am I going to die? I mean, this is horrible. And that's just to get another repeat mammogram. And then if you need to proceed on to, you know, a biopsy or something to find out what's wrong, it can be 4 to 6 weeks wait over there. Queens has much less. See, so there were, it depends on where you look. And Canada, actually, because they have a universal health care system, is moving to control the waits. We don't have any such chance. So this long speech is only to try to encourage you. When you hear these things, when you hear somebody saying, we don't want socialized medicine, or all these countries have long waits, keep in mind that it's not true, that people are just saying this, and that if you got some passion and you really want universal health care, you know, you could stand up and say, you know, that's not true. And there's stuff out there. Sicko is a great movie. There's stuff out there on the web. Jim and Renee, I'm sure, would be happy to give you supporting information. We in Hawaii, I think, have a chance. We may not know exactly what the path is. We have a chance to improve our health care for all of us, in particular for older people as well. but for everybody. And so I urge you all to back this movement. It needs all the help it's going to get because the forces of these big monopoly insurance companies are against it. But if it's going to happen at all, it's going to happen through the efforts of all of us who are here today, who listen to this talk, and I hope take some inspiration to join the fight and make it happen in Hawaii.
Just to follow up what Larry was saying, a couple of years ago, Statistics Canada, who does the statistical analysis for the Canadian government, did a study of wait times in between Canada and the U.S. and found that they were about the same. This is several years ago, before Canada started this drive to drive down the wait times by funding the healthcare system more. And the reason that a lot of the wait times happen is because it's not emergency. Emergency, they get handled right away. But if it's elective, then you kind of have to wait a little, and that's what they do in a universal health care system where they coordinate according to need. Thank you.
As a matter of fact, that's what they do at Kaiser. We go to Kaiser, and the thing is that this study was done about Canada and U.S. comparable wait times. And the thing is that after it was over, what happened was that the people in Canada insisted on decreasing their wait times. But see, because our system is so disorganized and fragmented and whatnot, and people are not organized, there's nobody saying, let's decrease the wait times. But you see, when we have a system, they have a system that's roughly equivalent to ours as far as wait times go. And then I would like to mention, though, that every year, 18,000 people die in this country for lack of health care. And so those folks are, they're no longer waiting. Yes?
Nothing has been said about...
Would you like to come up?
No, except for...
Okay.
Nothing's been said about
cost. Cost. Okay. That is the $24,000 question. And it used to be the $64,000. It's a $240,000 question nowadays. But anyway, the cost, like I say, right now we are paying for health care and for universal health care, but we're not getting it. We have different systems here. The civil service system has their health care system. Prepaid Health Care Act is another system and whatnot. These are all pools that basically is going to be a challenge for the authority to come in. But a part of their mandate, it seems to me, would be is that they certainly will not raise the cost. However, there may be some initial startup costs. And so people just have to decide, do they want everybody to be covered? Does everybody want to have first-class health care regardless of their good fortune or bad fortune and whatnot? Would they just like to have a plan that says there's no more medical bankruptcy? I mean, the whole idea that you get cancer, you get leukemia, and your policy has a cap on it at 1 million, and so after, and your health care requires $2 million, then what happens is when you get to $1 million, then you have to go to a begathon on TV, the newspaper interviews you and whatnot, and so you try to raise money in the community and things like that. But also people end up losing their homes and their assets. As a matter of fact, about 50% of bankruptcy in this country is connected with inadequate health care. People who are full, they are covered. They think that they have it made, and they end up going bankrupt. About half. Yes, sir.
Automobile companies are losing dollars here because of the health costs that are down there. Their cars, so that's translating into lost jobs. And the doctors are going out of business because they're not treated fairly by the insurance companies. And unlike Medicare, there's no Freedom of Information Act, so if they're treated unfairly by the insurance company can just say, look, there's no COLA requirement. to make them disclose why they're treating the doctor unfairly. And you don't mention the fact that insurance companies are making medical decisions, not doctors.
Right.
Or not medical professionals.
Right. Sure. Sure.
If I were to vote for this bill today, I would vote, personally would vote against it. I have Medicare ever since I was old enough to sign up, and about 15 years ago, something like that, I signed up with the AARP supplement. I have not paid a doctor bill in that time, and I just am recovering from a $73,000 accident, car accident. I haven't paid a cent. So why would I opt for something like this? I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just asking. I know what I've got. I don't know what the system holds.
Well, I think part of this, see, my mindset really goes back. I was born in the latter part of the New Deal after the Great Depression. And I think that what came out of the New Deal basically is the people stood up and they had a good spokesperson in FDR. And they basically said, corporate America, you had our economy and you crashed it big time, even bigger than in 1873. And so what happened was is that people said, we have to take care of each other. And we're going to regulate. We're going to make sure that people don't make profits, huge, huge profits off of the misfortune of people. That's why they came up with the Social Security system and eventually Medicare. And so, to me, this is what it's about. It's about, do we take care of each other, or do we just take care of ourselves?
And as Jim was saying earlier about the Prepaid Health Care Act, it's not that you throw out what you have. You combine everything you have into this system. So it's not like this would replace Medicare. Medicare, and the Prepaid Health Care Act would all be brought into this system. And do you have long-term care? Do you have your prescription drugs all covered? Do you have everything you need? No. You know, a lot of these things were not included in the Canadian system, durable goods, prescription drugs, because they were not things that were on the radar screen when they became a universal healthcare system. But now that we are one of the last people to have a universal healthcare system, we can include these things in our system and figure out how to use it. So it's not as if you have to be worried that what you have would be replaced as far as Medicare goes.
So I guess that'll be it, unless there's other questions. Thank you so much for your attention. But I would like to make a plea to you. If you have not seen the movie Sicko, it's been taken out of the theaters, but I'm hoping, against hope, that they will put it in the dollar theaters over at Restaurant Row. That would be great, because the folks like us who go to the dollar movies, we're the people who need to see this movie. And I'm sure it's going to come out on DVD. Maybe you'd want to get it and show it to other people, your family and whatnot, and discuss this and become part of a movement to have true universal health care in Hawaii, where nobody is left out and nobody is left behind, because health care is a human right. Thank you.
Thanks to Renee Ng and Jim Brewer. This is a very important subject. Thank you for speaking to us again. And this will come up again next year. Kukua Council supports whatever legislation is going to go through. I'd like to recognize, I missed you before, Senator Clarence Nishihara has joined us. Thank you very much for coming. We always appreciate Senator shows up every once in a while and makes us think we're important here. So.